about some work I did last year with Henry Tai, and why we recently returned to this problem, the problem of resonant tunneling in quantum field theory, and we realized it may have an application in superfluid theory. Okay, so we started studying this problem when we were thinking about field theories with many minima. It obviously has many applications there. Which states are actually net stable on appropriate timescales. And we started studying the problem because of we suspected that there might be a resonant tunneling phenomenon in quantum field theory because of a generic argument I'll give you in a minute. Recently returned to this problem. Realized that superfluid helium 3 may actually provide a method of testing this. Let's start with quantum mechanics. So imagine a potential with two barriers like this. Can talk about the tunneling rate, as gamma from A to B. But the interesting part of the tunneling rate really is this exponential suppression. So in general, it's exponential suppressed. There's some dimensional full prefactor, but for many cases, this is less interesting than that. And this exponential part. And so, for the most part, I'll just be talking about the tunneling probability, make this tunneling rate being a volume dimensionless appropriately, and where this k is just some order unity, and we'll really just be concerned with this exponential part. So, I'll use this notation here. TAB is the tunneling probability in some amount of time or in some volume in quantum field theory case. So, if you are interested in studying this potential in quantum mechanics, you might naively think that the tunneling probability from A to C is just the product of the tunneling probabilities from A to B and B to C. But this argument is incorrect, in particular if there is a classically allowed region in between these two variables. A good way to get some intuitive picture for this is what actually happens is if you average over the initial energies, you find that the average time, small t here refers to the time, it takes to go from A to C goes as the sum of the times it takes to go from A to B and B to C, as might be intuitively obvious. And this means that on average there's this more complicated relationship between the probabilities. And this enhancement, so that means that this naive intuition cannot be correct for all values of the energy, and at least for some particular values of the energy, the tunneling probability has to be enhanced. And we expect something similar to occur in quantum field theory. So, motivation. The rest of my talk, I'll first remind you in a bit more detail how resonant tunneling works in quantum mechanics. And this will be particularly going to be, I'll show you how to map this problem onto the quantum mechanical problem in the semi-classical limit. And then for the last part of my talk, I'll tell you how this applies to superfluid theory. So, a bit more detail about this potential we're studying. So, here these xi's are what I'll refer to as the classical turning points. So, this, this region here between x1 and x2, I'll call a classically forbidden region, where the particle could not be classically, and between x2 and x3 is a classically allowed region. Okay. So, if we want to study tunneling in such a potential, we can do using the WKB approximation is expand a general wave function in powers of h in the leading order. What you find in the classically allowed regions are left moving and right moving waves. whose functional form is here. And in the classically forbidden regions, you find the solutions are growing. So the complete solution. Let's start by reminding you how it works for single barrier tunneling. So for single barrier tunneling, we can write a complete solution as a linear combination of these left moving and right moving waves in the A vacuum, a linear combination of growing and decaying modes in the classically forbidden region, and similarly in vacuum B. And all that's left to do is match these solutions at the classical turning points. And if you do that, you find that these coefficients here are related by this matrix, where this theta is this integral in the classically forbidden region under the barrier. And so the tunneling probability then will just be the this coefficient Vr, the right moving wave, and the V vacuum over the right, incoming coefficient of the incoming wave squared. And you see that that's exponentially suppressed because this theta is exponential. Okay. So we basically use the same method of analysis to analyze double barrier. So instead of just matching solutions in the three regions, the A vacuum, the first barrier, and B vacuum, we also need to match the solution onto the second barrier and C vacuum. And if you do that exactly the same way, you find the tunneling probability takes this form, where theta is the same as before. Phi is given by a very similar expression, just integral of under the second barrier, and W takes this form. So in particular, if x2 is equal to x3, then W is 0, or some other reason is W vanishes, then this term disappears, and you find that your intuition, the naive intuition, is in fact correct, and that the tunneling probability just goes as the product of the single barrier tunneling probabilities. But that is not the case, in particular, if W is a half integer times pi. In that case, this term vanishes, and we're just left with this term. And that means that the tunneling probability is given by this function. And in particular, if theta is equal to phi, if, for instance, if the barriers are the same, have the same shape, then same shape and same height, then this tunneling probability can be order unary. And even if these are not equal, this can in general be exponentially enhanced compared to this one. So basically what happens is for some particular values of energy, so plotted here is energy and some arbitrary units, transmission probability here, for most values of the energy you get that the tunneling probability goes as the product the single barrier tunneling probabilities, but for some particular values of energy, the transmission probability can approach unity. This is one up here. And we can think about this physically in a number of different ways. So you can either think about this as coherence, interference between a path that just passes once through both barriers, and a path that passed through one this first barrier, bounced back and forth in this intermediate barrier n times, and then continue through the second barrier. Or alternatively, you can think about it as that this large enhancement occurs when the energy of the incoming particle matches the energy of a bound state of the particle. So that's how things work in quantum mechanics. So we now want to analyze the analogous problem in quantum field theory. So our goal is to analyze a potential like this. But before I do that, I'd like to remind you a bit about how how to approach the single barrier tunneling problem in quantum field theory. So I'll first remind you very briefly to establish a notation and explain why it's a more difficult method to analyze this problem on the Coleman's familiar instanton method. And then I will tell you about the method we'll use to analyze this problem, the functional Schrodinger method. I explain why it's equivalent to Coleman's instanton method for the single barrier case and generalize it to multiple barriers. Okay. So Coleman famously showed that the tunneling rate for unit volume just goes as minus Euclidean action of the solution at a bubble of formation of a bubble of vacuum B. So let's just start with a simple symmetric partic potential with a small symmetry breaking term and analyze it in a thin wall potential. So we need to do to find the tunneling probability of forming a bubble of vacuum B is find a solution to this equation. And Coleman showed that the dominant has dominant contribution to this tunneling probability as full-force symmetry. And you can solve this Euclidean equation of motion rather easily in the thin wall approximation. You can find that solution is this form, where here mu is the domain wall tension and r is the radius of the bubble. And you can evaluate the Euclidean action in the standard way, and you find this form depends on the difference in vacuum energy density between the two vacua and the domain wall tension.
And all four symmetry. So we are in 1 plus 1 dimension?
Mm-hmm. No, we're three plus one. My entire talk. 3 plus 1.
So the all four symmetry comes from 3 plus 1?
Right, so you rotate into Euclidean time. Okay, so we need to ensure that our solution is a stationary point, which means we have to apply this condition or equivalently energy conservation. If we do either of those, that fixes the size of the bubble. This form. And standard form for the Euclidean action. Okay. And in particular, this will be important for what I have to say later, the bubble always grows. So it's always energetically favorable for the bubble to grow classically after
population. If the bubble grows, shouldn't you also keep basically DSDR dot? D in your energy conservation?
For energy, so this is applied only at the moment at which the bubble is nucleated classically. So it's basically where you join your Euclidean solution onto your old Lorentzian solution.
So you should basically turn into something that's not yet growing and start growing.
Right. So it'll start growing after. In this case, it'll always grow because it's, this is the critical size for it to grow. Classically is 2/3 of the size that it's made. So that is the standard way of analyzing single barrier tunneling in quantum field theory. But importantly, we needed to know, so if we want to generalize this method to double barrier tunneling, we need to know in which regions are classically allowed, which regions are classically forbidden. Which region we need to use Euclidean time, which regions we need to use Lorentzian time, which is a difficult problem a priori. So we can instead turn to this other method, functional Schrodinger method, which will allow us to circumvent that problem. We can treat the classically allowed and classically forbidden regions in the same manner, and we can figure out after we performed our analysis which regions are possibly forbidden, which greatly simplifies the problem. So the basic idea here is that we're going to reduce our quantum field theory problem to a one-dimensional quantum mechanical problem in the semi-classical limit. So these people showed that the vacuum tunneling rate is dominated by a discrete set of classical paths. So that's going to be the key idea that allows us to make this reproduction. As I mentioned before, it's entirely equivalent to the method I just showed you for single variant tunneling, but much more easily generalizes multiple variant tunneling. So basically, what we'll do is start with the Hamiltonian for a single scalar field, canonical kinetic term. No gravity here.
Can I interrupt you briefly? I missed the first part of your talk, unfortunately. And you have the three wells. Is the idea to start on the left and you're tunneling right through the far side, or are you?
Yes, that. So right. Let me go back. So that's the problem I'm working on too. So
yeah.
we want to study tunneling from A to C. Right now, I'm about to show you another way to study tunneling just from A to B.
But there's an issue, so the reason I'm asking is that the Coleman story for one barrier, if you just had a barrier, then you could imagine, then what happens depends a little bit on what state is you prepare on the left-hand side of the barrier. So if you have a ground state, or you could have some
yes, so I'm just considering zero energy, so
right,
homogeneous.
Yeah. I haven't got the question yet. So the Coleman story is you're starting with the vacuum on the left-hand side, and then you get out. But once you've got an intermediate barrier, there must be the way you're setting the problem up. This sounds like it's amounting to making a statement about how much time you spend in the middle barrier. And do you get a chance to settle down into the vacuum there before you tunnel the next step, or is there a fit? So the assumptions you're making, are they essentially the Coleman one twice?
That's not.
What's the statement you're making about what goes on in well B?
I'll get to that in a few.
I'm asking you because I have another appointment at 10 o'clock, so I have to leave before you finish.
Sorry.
I can ask you after you're over.
You can also leave. Okay,
so go ahead. Okay, so quantize this Hamiltonian standard way. And so we want to map this onto the quantum mechanics problem, so we'll just expand. It's wave functional. It has the same probabilistic interpretation as a wave function. It's just a function of the field configuration in this exponential form. And if we then expand this in powers of s in powers of h bar using the functional Schrodinger equation, we get an infinite series of equations, but if we just ignore the higher order terms, we're left with this equation here at leading order in the semi-classical limit. Our goal really is to determine this value of S naught, which will allow us to determine the wave function and thus the tunneling. So the main idea we're going to use here is this idea of most probable escape path, which is a trajectory in the configuration space of phi, parameterized by a single real parameter lambda, gives the dominant contribution to the tunneling probability. We know that these, since they're discrete, discrete set of these, the variation of S vanishes perpendicular to these paths, and could be non-vanishing along the path. And it turns out, if you find the equation of motion for these NDP in the classically forbidden regions, they satisfy the Euclidean equations of motion. So, the typical most probable escape path could look something like this. So, this entire set of paths is what I mean by a most probable escape path. Field configurations that are parameterized by some value of lambda. Okay. So we make these definitions.
So sorry, how do you find those configurations? Is there just from Euclidean equation, or is that?
These, yes. So right now I haven't told you what lambda is. I'll get to which particular choice one that I made up, I'll get to that in a minute. But so you're improbably free to choose any lamp you like and just take your solution.
But that care right that
this so this is some parameterization of the solution to the Euclidean equations of motion. You're free to choose Euclidean time as lambda if you like, but
but your boundary conditions where you fixed x at the end, is that at one end?
So we're starting in the false vacuum here. Minus false vacuum.
Right. So at the left hand side, you're sitting at the minimum, and you make a choice on the right hand side too, or do you?
So at infinity, spatial infinity, you're always in the.
Right, but that's a statement about the state you start off in, right?
Right.
So I'm just asking, so you're making that Coleman choice?
Yes, correct. Right now, I'm just analyzing a Coleman problem. Yeah. So, with the following definitions, we can solve for the this S naught, small algebra, so just define. I call the effective tunneling potential here. It's the spatial integral of the gradient of potential terms. It's going to play the role of the potential played in the quantum mechanical problem. And if you find a path length in field configuration space, that allows you to do some manipulations that will can get the solution to the functional Schrodinger equation in this part. So, do that, you get that the, you plug that into the WKB wave function, and you find that it takes this one. So, it looks very similar to the WKB wave function we saw in quantum mechanics, with the main difference that the mass of the particle is now position dependent. It's this form in terms of the most probable escape path. And the effective tunneling potential plays the role of potential. And so I'll now make a particular choice of lambda that's going to be convenient for analyzing this problem. And that's just choosing lambda to be the spatial radius of the problem. So that means that lambda is zero when this domain wall begins to form it. It's a minus lambda c, and the radius of the bubble is lambda c when Euclidean time is zero. And so the most probable escape path I showed earlier is just with this choice of lambda. And if you make the approximation that basically, the walls are far away from each other, well separated. It sort of breaks down in this region, and you can write the standard Coleman solution in terms of this lambda in this form, and it just looks like this. So as lambda equals zero, you're in a false vacuum, and at lambda equals lambda c, a critical size bubble. So, with this choice of lambda, you can calculate the effective tunneling potential. So, with the approximation I made, it looks like the black line. Without that approximation, if you just go back to Coleman's thin wall approximation, it's the blue dotted line. And the position-dependent mass takes this form. The two lines are indistinguishable with or without the approximation. And in particular, since you're only interested basically in the product of these things, since this vanishes where approximation causes an appreciable difference between just using the standard domain wall formula, these differences are not important. So if you do that, you can get the tunneling potential and mass, and from there you can calculate the amplitude, and you find that it's exactly the exponential minus half e plus a. So if you square that, you get the familiar. So this is clearly a much more complicated way of solving the problem, but it has the major advantage that we can treat the problem in the same symmetrically in the classically allowed regions and the classically forbidden regions. So if you follow the argument I sketched for solving for S in the Lorentzian regions, then it's almost unchanged. You could get a few minus signs and I's that are different. And if, in particular, if we choose lambda, again, just to be the spatial radius of the bubble, then the most probable escape path takes exactly the same form in the Lorentzian regions as it does in the Euclidean regions. So we can use a single real parameter to describe not only the quantum nucleation of the bubble, but the classical drift growth afterwards. This is going to be particularly useful when we turn to the quantum nucleation problem. So this is the potential points to study. And so subscripts 1s are going to refer to the first pair here, and 2s will refer to the pair between.
So you mentioned that you can use a single parameter, this lambda, to describe both Euclidean and Lorentzian region. But your functions are not analytic functions of this lambda, are they?
So let's see. The solution takes this form, so at lambda equals lambda c. Yeah, with this approximation, there's no discontinuities.
I'm just thinking if you're matching this to a
right,
then the curvature obviously goes from positive number to negative number.
Right.
So something must be non-analytic.
Non-analytic. Right.
Okay.
I think we smoothed out the non-analytic when we get this approximation.
You do. Okay.
So we're looking for a solution that results in a formation of a bubble of C. So schematically, we expect the solution to look something like this. So we'll have some bubble of vacuum B, inside of which is a bubble of vacuum C. Assume that when they're classically nucleated and begin to grow classically, the radius of the outside bubble is R1, inside bubble is R2, and then the radius of bubble of this larger bubble is lambda when the inside one is zero. So we're not assuming anything about here about which regions are classically allowed or classically forbidden. Just assuming that it looks something like this in the radius. Okay, so if we make that assumption and go through the same analysis basically for a same analysis I showed earlier for multiple bubbles, we get the Kelvin probability takes the same form. Theta takes the same form as before. Phi is a slight modification, and W takes this form. So we'd see that in fact we can get a resonance as long as satisfy this condition that W is having integer plus phi. So what is this possible with our assumption for the formula solution? So if you go with that assumption, since we don't need to know which regions are classically allowed and which regions are classically forbidden before we begin the analysis, we find that the mass takes some form like this. So here it's just the same form as it took in the single variable case, and over here it grows more. rapidly, it's still asymptotically like length of cubes, but in exact functional form is somewhat modified. And the effect of tunneling potential can take this form for appropriate choices of the parameters of the potential. So we need to, so now that we have the solution, we need to make sure it makes sense apply a number of consistency conditions. First of which is that we need to demand that the total energy vanishes. So that when the bubbles are nucleated, we integer possible. So that implies that there's a relationship between R1 and R2, the radius of the larger bubble and the radius of the smaller bubble. They're not individually constrained because we're only demanding total energy is conserved, not the energy of each bubble vanished individually, which means that R1 and R2 have to lie somewhere along this black curve.
Okay. And that means it's not possible to just have one bubble directly focused in. You have to do this two step, or you're always doing this two step.
Well, you could have a. I mean, there's certainly no reason we couldn't have a single bubble that goes directly to C. It's just hard to see where the resonance, how you could get a resonance.
Okay, so you just think, let's look at this process and then compare it to other...
Right, so that certainly would be one way that you could form a bubble at C. It's just that if you can go through the analysis, and if you do, you find that for that case, the... effective tunneling potential, it would only have a single variable. So there's no way to get a reference to that case. So we need a tunneling potential that has classically a loud region in the intermediate in here. So if the radii of the bubble is chosen incorrectly, this will not dip below zero. So we're only considering zero energy tunneling here. So we can imagine, for some choices of R1, R2, this will not dip below zero. I mean, so that excludes anything on this side of this blue dotted line. So anything up here does not have classical lab region. I should have mentioned it. This plot is just for some particular choice of potential. All of these curves shift around a bit as you change. Furthermore, we need a second barrier. There has to be two classically forbidden regions. So if you choose the R1 incorrectly, then this second barrier will be too small to cross zero, and it will be some small bump over here. That constraint excludes anything below this, this other blue dotted line, so on this side. So we're left with some region here. And there's a third constraint that we need at least one of the bubbles to grow classically after nucleation. Particularly, we need potential to asymptote minus equilibrium, which, in the case I've plotted here, provides the weakest constraint. It means that we have to be on this side of this green dotted line. But if you choose a different potential, it can actually be stronger than this condition. So that leaves us with some region here. And in general, there are a discrete set of points on this part of the curve that satisfy the resonance condition that W is a half integer times pi. There may be no points. There may be only one. Maybe several. But if there are many, then the dominant contribution to the tunneling probability is going to be the point on this, the point that satisfies the resonance condition is closest to the point where on this line where phi is equal to theta. As you move along this curve, the potential changes. So that means that phi h, which is the integral basically from here to here, will change slightly, and phi, which is the integral under this region of curve m times u, will change. And sometimes there's a point where they're equal, not for all choices of potential, but for some choices of potential, there's a point where phi is equal to the theta, and then the dominant contribution will just be the point that satisfies the resonance condition that's closest. And there's one other interesting thing that we see here. So it turns out to be the case that R1 is always formed at a radius that is larger than the critical radius for a bubble that's nucleated for single barrier tunneling. So R1 will always grow classically after nucleation. So this point here is the critical radius for a single barrier nucleation. But it turns out that R2 is always going to be smaller than its critical radius, and it can either be larger than the radius it needs to grow classically after nucleation, or it can be smaller, depending on the choice of potential. And so in the first case, if it's large enough to grow classically, the effect will be tunneling from A to C, because both bubbles will grow classically. But it's also possible for the inside bubble to be too small to grow classically after it's nucleated. And so what will happen is that the small bubble of C will be nucleated, will then collapse just after it's nucleated. And the effect will be tunneling from A to B, but it can be exponentially faster than you would naively expect just based on the single barrier tunneling, probability. So the presence of the third vacuum could exponentially enhance the tunneling rate current. So now I'm going to turn and tell you a bit about how this relates to superfluid helium 3. So first a bit about superfluid helium 3. So it's you cool helium 3 to a few micro kelvins, it will both condense and form a superfluid state, which means that viscosity goes to zero, the thermal conductivity goes to infinity. And there are many phases of superfluid helium 3 that are believed to exist, but the two that are going to be relevant for what I'm about to tell you are the A phase, which is stable near the superfluid transition temperature at small magnetic field, and the B phase, which is stable at zero temperature, near zero. So you can cool a sample of superfluid helium 3 that's in the A state below the transition temperature, and below the transition temperature, and what you find is that you get a phase transition to B, typically in minutes or hours, depending on how much you need to be super cool. There's many reasons to believe this is due to homogeneous nucleation, which I've been telling you about. In particular, there are superfluid helium 3 is one of the most pure substances, pure quantum systems that we know of. Everything besides helium 4 has frozen at these temperatures, and helium 4 will phase separate at these temperatures, so we really have a pure sample. And furthermore, A phase is energetically favorable near the container walls. So even if you cool down to the lowest temperatures in the laboratory, you still typically have a small region of the A phase near the container wall. So it's really not due to any inhomogeneities or defects forming near the walls. And so you can actually, when you observe this transition, you can measure the free energy density difference between the two phases. You can measure the tension, the domain wall between these two phases. And from that information, you can estimate the time it would take to thermally fluctuate over the barrier. You can also estimate the time it would take to quantum fluctuate over the barrier. And if you perform these estimates, you find that they're both exponentially longer than the AP. So clearly some problem here. So this has been well-known and well-known problem for almost 30 years. So there have been some attempts to explain this, one of which is the so-called Big Alaska Theory proposed by Leggett. And this is the idea that the B-phase nucleation is due to cosmic rays. And the idea here is that the incoming cosmic ray comes a large amount of heat and a small volume. And heat transport is very efficient, and this causes the center, basically the collision site, to cool while it's surrounded by a hot shell of helium-3. And so the effect is you have a cool center and a hot shell, sort of like a baked Alaskan Zerway of ice cream surrounded by a hot cake. That's the name. And so this was one very popular theory at one time, but it's been tested, and perhaps the most biggest problem for this theory is that there was several groups actually that surrounded samples of helium-3 in the A phase with cosmic ray detectors. It didn't have full 4-5 coverage, but most of the samples covered. And they found zero correlation between incoming cosmic rays and nucleation. So this theory still has some proponents, but it's certainly not widely accepted. So still believe me, no problem. Okay, so I'm proposing that perhaps resonant tunneling has something to do with this. So I've only told you about two phases of supercooled helium-3 that are relevant to these temperatures in magnetic fields. So how can resonant tunneling help? Phases. Fortunately, near the boundary of the container, the symmetry of the A phase is broken. So the orientation vector needs to be normal to the boundary. So the A phase is effectively broken into two distinct subphases near the boundary. All samples prepared to date consist of multiple domains of each of these samples, each of these subphases. And this distinction between these two subphases really disappears in the So we have here, in fact, three different phases. So we have one of these subphases A, another subphase, and B phase. And in the absence of, so you might expect that these phases are degenerate, expect there's a number of small symmetry breaking effects that cause the free energy density of one of these subphases to be favorable to the other, particularly external magnetic fields. We expect that the free energy difference between these subphases is small and spatially varying. Furthermore, since we're cooling the sample, we're actually changing the parameters of potential. So perhaps sweeping through a region in order to find, to satisfy the resonance condition. So this seems like a very natural place to find a resonance effect. And there's experimental evidence that this nucleation does occur near the boundaries, from where this difference between the 2A subphases is meaningful. So we've done some numerical studies looking at so these choices of free energy, energy density differences and domainal tensions are chosen just for illustrative purposes, not necessarily related to those in superfluid helium 3. And you see that for as long as there the domainal tension between the so 2 refers to the second barrier, okay, so that would be the barrier between one of the A phases and the B phase. As long as that barrier is somewhat larger than the barrier between the two, say, 2 A subphases, then it seems plausible to get a large enhancement in the Kalman property. So these black dots refer to cases where you can get a very large enhancement in the Kalman probability compared to what you naively expect just based on a single barrier. And so you see here that in so this graph shows not only that this is a region where you can, it's most likely to get a large enhancement, it also shows that that we get catalyzed tunneling if the free energy density differences between the two phases, between the free energy density differences are comparable. So catalyzed tunneling wouldn't really help us here. That would be tunneling between the two subphases. In fact, it would be tunneling between two subphases of A. But as long as, again, the difference in free energy between the A phase and the B phase is larger than the moderately larger than the difference in free energy that's in between the two A subphases, then we're in the resonant tunneling region. So these dots up here are really the region in parameter space that they were interested in. And they can potentially explain this fast nucleation of the B phase.
So, I mean, other calculations are for homogeneous vacua, right?
Right.
But these, the vacua you're talking about are homogeneous because they obviously have something with interaction with the wall. So.
Correct. We need to ensure that the variation of the parameters is not, as long as it's not too large over the size. Over the scale at which the bubble is nucleated, the bubble this typical scale of nucleation, then we assume that although this formalism certainly has corrections, that this type of certainly has corrections, they're perhaps not.
They say bubbles that are very small, so it doesn't matter if it's some variations.
Right. Okay. At least we believe that's the case in many
So the 2A phase, the reason you have 2A phase is because you're saying interaction with the wall gives you some kind of orientation which brings additional symmetry, correct? Is this something you can tune? First, do we know roughly what the energy difference? You guys just start assuming that it's the same. You just get two different vectors with roughly the same energy. Is this something you can tune experimentally by properties of the wall?
So to, if you apply a magnetic field, you can tune the difference in the energy. The walls, I mean, will have some small, they're made materials that have some small magnetic fields in the walls. And there's certainly never a sample of zero magnetic field everywhere.
So is the idea that to test this hypothesis for this explanation for the mutation of B phase would be to somehow make the difference in A so big that the resonant tunneling is no longer possible?
Actually, the way we're proposing that this might be, because that's one way, is that there are actually current experiments that are being prepared as we speak to prepare samples in which the entire sample is in the same subbasement. So if it happens to be in the lower energy subphase of A, then this effect will disappear. We expect that in these new samples, at least the degree of supercooling we could achieve would be pretty much greater. Also, perhaps, although it's perhaps farther in the future, they could look and see two domain walls instead of step one. Apparently, that's a more of an experimental challenge than preparing these single domain walls. Samples in which the entire sample is in the same. So we're currently working on a more detailed analysis of these domain tensions and free energy. Hopefully, show that we're in fact in the region that a parameter space that I showed you on the previous plot, and that we can in fact get a little large enough to get into that's currently underway. It could also be interesting to study a general case of resonant tunneling. We've only looked at single scalar fields, and particularly the case with including gravity. Thank you for your time.
This is done adiabatically, or like the actual experiments and the procedure is done.
The experiments have been done in several different ways. I believe most of them have been done adiabatically.
Okay, and this procedure applies only in the adiabatic limit, right?
Right.
Is this possible to extend to non adiabatic, or is this just like is that too difficult? Because you would think that you'd be able to tell, you'd be able to sort of experimentally tell between various non-adiabatic, like, to see the tunneling between two phases in a non-adiabatic sense, probably, that could be like a smoking gun for that sort of thing, you know what I mean?
Oh, right, that's a very, very interesting idea. That would be a very interesting calculation to do. I imagine it's somewhat significantly more difficult.
Yeah.
If that calculation can be done, that would be another great way to do it.
So is there any way you could make an argument based on the number of different domains in an experimental sample and the degree of fine-tuning that's necessary to get resonant tunneling that would sort of point to this explanation as a likely hypothesis? I mean, let's say I just say there's 500 domains in an experimental sample. You go off and make 500 different random potentials with different barriers and different interstiffnesses. You make some argument like, oh, it's very likely that in that set of 500, given the degree of fine tuning that's necessary, I find one that works.
That's an interesting direction to go in. I'm not sure that information, the number of domains in each of the samples, is actually available in the literature. If we have that information,
other guesses, like hundreds, thousands?
I believe it's
tens
or hundreds.
Okay.
I think Max wants to catch the 500, right?
No, I don't want to. That's come on, Nash.